my paper in here. All right, good morning to everybody. This is on. It's a pleasure for me to be here with you. And I get excited when we start talking about the kingdom. Brother was talking about the kingdom of God. And we're a part of the greatest kingdom that ever was, that ever will be. And our commander-in-chief is the highest. He is the most distinguished commander-in-chief that ever was, that ever will be. And he is the one we want to take our orders from. But, like was mentioned this morning, we live by a different set of rules. There's a different set of rules in this fight, in this war. Huh? The Bible says there's a good fight, and that's the one we're supposed to be engaged in. There's a bad fight, too. Maybe sometimes we're in that one as well, but the good fight is the one that gets us excited, huh? Because we're going to win. We already know that. We're going to win. We may lose a battle or two, but we're going to win in the end, huh? If we're faithful and we heed the commands of our commander-in-chief. Brother Rick asked me to come and share a bit Cam's expectations for Agape CASP. And it's also been a blessing for me to work at the CASP program. You find out that the Spirit of God is diverse, huh? You know, there's 20 different constituencies that are a part of this group, CASP group now, and I love working with each one. I believe we can learn from each other. And so looking at what Cam expects from your group's participation, a couple of things, you will see some questions on your handout there, but before that, a couple things that I thought about. You know, last year in our at our board meeting, we had Barry Grant. Brother Barry gave a topic on church and state. And one of the things he mentioned is that if we are doing this just to escape persecution and make our life easier, it's probably going to spin out. Like, there's not a lot of, yeah, just to make our life easier, then we've missed the mark, actually. But if we're doing this because that's just who we are, that this lifestyle of service, alternative service is what we're talking about, this lifestyle of service is, that's just what we do. That's who we are. And so one of the expectations I believe that Cam would have for your group is that you would carry that vision. We're not just doing this program as a program. We're actually doing this because we're Christians. We believe in a service mentality, huh? To God and to our fellow men. You know, the CASP program, all of our projects need to fall into categories of national interest. It can be several different categories. There's a list there, but it has to be of national interest. Forestry projects, rebuilding, all of those things. And while we are engaged in this program to create a relationship with Selective Service so that when a draft does hit, we've got our ducks in a row, That shouldn't be the end goal. I think our expectation at CAM is that when Selective Service looks at your projects, looks at your people, when your boys get in front of the local board and have to answer those questions, they can tell that, hey, this is a lifestyle. This is not new or foreign to these people, this service mentality. We wanna work just as much as the serviceman on the front line. We want to serve just like they do, but we can't serve like they do. We serve in a different capacity because we actually take our orders from a different commander-in-chief, if you please. So that would be one expectation, is carry the vision of a service mentality. And the CAS program is supposed to be just a tool for you as churches to use to foster this idea in your young men and your young women and all of your people. A platform for you to use to teach that service mentality, to carry the vision. You know, Christian Aid Ministries, CAS, now is a qualified employer. We have an MOU with Selective Service. And so when a draft would be enacted, maybe a little bit here of what happens if a draft would actually happen. Christian Aid Ministries, like some other groups, like Brother Rick said, the Old Order Amish, they have an MOU with Selective Service, and there's other groups that do as well. They are qualified employers that the Selective Service trusts. So when the President says, or the Department of Defense says, we need 100,000 young men, that's the duty or the job of Selective Service is to find those men and put them into boot camp. And so they have a criteria they follow, but it's pretty much done by lottery. Ages 18 to 26, 25. Once you're 26, you're not eligible anymore. But they will start with 19-year-olds will be the first to be called, and then it's 20 and 21 and on up the line, and 18-year-olds will be called last. But it's done through a lottery, and interesting statistic right now, in the world, if they would call for 100,000 young men, and 100,000 young men would be drafted, in the world setting, only 20% of those qualify. That's just how it is right now. That's because of drugs, health issues, and all of that. Those are statistics right now. 20% of young men out there qualify. And so we know that in Anabaptist circles, it's not like that. Probably 80% would qualify. And so those are some interesting statistics. So if a draft would happen, back to that, Selective Service, they place these young men with qualified employers, and some will end up at CASP. And the idea for the CASP program was that in order to have a controlled environment, why not create a place where we can place our own people and we can control the environment and have a safe place for them to serve in. And so that's part of the idea. Now, so the idea of the pilot projects was born. Right now, a pilot project Each group needs to do a project every other year, a four-week pilot project. But in the case of a draft, you would have to serve 2 years minimum. So we would need some long-term bases. And one of the things that I've been encouraging groups to do is to think about a long-term base. Right now, it's just pilot projects. Some of our projects, we work with DRS or our disaster response. We will take a CASP group and go in before DRS starts, maybe in December, and after the volunteers are done in April, we'll take another CASP group and go on a DRS base and do rebuilding and some of those things. Some projects, we find our own projects. There's forestry projects, and so I'm encouraging groups in your area. If you have state parks or national forests or rebuilding opportunities where you would say, okay, we could use 10 people here for 4 weeks, this would be a wonderful opportunity, you find that project, we encourage you to do that. Link up with, Habitat for Humanity. There are other organizations out there who have some funding. They just need some volunteers. In Hutchinson, Kansas, the Beachies, they have linked up with an organization called, do you remember that? There's an organization out there that works with low-income housing, and they take houses and remodel them. They have the funding. We provide volunteers, and we go there every year. 2 months project, January and February usually. So, you know, those are things you can be looking for, building relationships with. In Colorado, we have a relationship with the forestry department out there and do projects in the National Forest out there every year. Pros and cons to forestry projects is less contact with, maybe on the ministry side, with victims of disasters. You're more in the woods building trails and doing maintenance in parks, but you're building in the actual event of a draft. I think those are the important relationships with government that are going to take us through, so don't forget those. And they're interesting as well for young men to some of these Minnesota boundary waters do projects up there where you camp, hike back in, and there's no power tools, and you rough it. It's real boot camp. So lots of different opportunities out there. We might have to think out of the side of the box, because I think you have how many regions?
Well, at this point, I guess we would have total four.
And so potentially need more projects.
Project maybe every 6 months.
Yeah. So
does each region need to do one project every 2 years, or does CAS or the Agape?
Well, the minimum is one every 2 years for Agape, okay. But the eastern region easily does that already.
Yeah, so from CAM's expectations, we would expect the Agape group as one to do a project every other year, but you can do more than that. That's up to you. Huh? You probably have way more young men than that, so the more the better, but we would just expect one every other year. If you find projects and want to go, there's no limit, to how many.
What determines a project, like
Well, we're saying 4 weeks. So approximately 8 hours a day for 4 weeks is what we're kind of expecting. Give or take a couple, I mean, we work if there's a funeral comes up or weather, anything like that. But yeah, we kind of expect 4 weeks, so 20 days, 8 hours is something to go by. In these manuals, CAM does have a minimum code of conduct. And the idea behind this is, so in the event of a draft, Selective Service could actually place anybody in your group. A conscientious objector that is not a Christian needs a place to go as well. And if Selective Service decides to put him in your group, what can you say? But CAM's minimum code of conduct is kind of designed to make that funnel pretty narrow. If you're not a Christian, you're going to feel pretty uncomfortable in our group because we've got the funnel pretty narrow. And it's maybe what you want to think about when you make your bylaws. What? Because there's no Selective Service, yeah, we can't discriminate on gender and that kind of thing, but we can have minimum conduct code or policies, and so you can make those tight enough where you can pretty much control, you know, who comes to your group. So that's the idea behind the minimum code of conduct, and I think they're all in that manual. You can look at those.
Who's expected to take the manual so long? Somebody's mentioned, I think Ricky said that.
Well, once we have it now identified, who's going to be the leaders in each region, you should take one because you can share the information then with the rest of the committee once you form your committee. So make sure
you can. You can copy those and.
Yeah. You can copy
So another thing that we would expect, and if you have regional groups, just like every group has a committee, chairman, vice chairman, and secretary, and however big you want your committee to be to organize and make your project happen. maybe just a bit of how the CAS board works. So there's 20 groups, and the chairman of all of those committees make up the CAS board. Now, the CAS board is only 15 members, and there's 20 groups, so the last five that came on, those chairmen are advisory board members. They didn't want the board to become too big, so they are advisory board members, but that's how the CAS board is made up. I'm the representative from CAM, and then the chairman of all the other committees make up the CAS board, make kind of the policies and any changes that need to be made. Yeah, as we go along, if you have questions, any of that, feel free to ask. So generally a committee has chairman, a vice chairman, a secretary, and maybe a couple other board members to make that job easier, delegate some of those responsibilities out. Then that regional CAS committee Here's a little bit of a job description for that committee. Shall research and develop new areas, potential projects, and projects that would fulfill the Selective Service System's goal of being beneficial to the nation's health, safety, or interest. And it can include educational service, environmental programs, healthcare services, social services, community services, such as helping the elderly, agriculture. These are approved, and also international projects like your group has done before in Haiti, and we've done, fellowship group has been in Honduras and several other places. So international projects are also approved. This committee modify and further develop specific policies and guidelines for the service unit, and develop functioning pilot project. Provide an ordained committee member to represent the constituency to CASP, which you have already, but I don't know how that's going to work in your own little group there. And then report program and project activities to CASP. So in the manual there, you'll also find information about what CASP wants in a report from your project. So all projects are reported back to CASP to make sure that the qualifications and the actual focus is met. So there's three forms that we would like to have back when you do your projects. They have big stars on them. They're in the manual, number 1, 2, and 3. And I think Rick can fill you in more on that. And we're coming up with a kind of a standardized project report form that we will get out to you. We talked about it at the board meeting yesterday. So you will know what to report. Basically, we want to know, where you did it, what happened, what the project consisted of, how many people were there, staff, ASWs, and interesting tidbits like the cost of the project, what were your evening activities, what was the spiritual impact on your young men. All of these, there was about 14 or 15 things that people came up with. So those are the kind of things we would like to see and hear in the report. And we'll get that form out to you. But reporting is important. And in the past, we used to pass this information on to Selective Service. So they have all those records. We don't do that anymore because they said they didn't need those anymore, but we do file them at the CAM office and have all of that on record in case they want that. Regional CASP committee responsibilities, making the handbook, keeping oversight of the project. As I had mentioned before, we rely, when you're accepted as a group, we kind of rely on your group to oversee what happens on the project. As you know, anything that happens, ultimately reliable for, and so that will probably come back into your lap. So people that you accept into your group are important because what happens on the project is kind of a representative of your group. So like he said, right now I get a lot of calls from individual men who don't understand how CASP works and say, hey, I want to be a part of the CASP program. So we have to explain that, well, we work with churches and church groups, so you will have to find a church group that you're aligned with and see if they want to accept you in their group. So I do point people here and there there's a lot of unaffiliated churches these days, and that's where a lot of these calls come from. So usually they know somebody, and I give them a list of the church groups, and then a lot of times I don't hear from them again, but I figure they find somebody that accepts them, or if a church group is interested in joining, if they have enough churches, they join. But so that's why it's important for you to take a good look at who's going to be on your project, because the reputation of Jesus Christ is at stake here, and we are concerned about that. What kind of oversight is required on a project? Basically, enforcement of the guidelines that CAM has put in place, and then ultimately that you have for your group as well. So, you know, as Rick will probably tell you, testimonies of many young men who have been on these projects, and either they were struggling or it actually becomes not only a teaching platform, but these young men, they develop relationships. They find help for struggles that they're in. There's lots of, you know, when you're together 4 weeks, discussions and lots of spiritual nurture. Now, there's a potential for the other as well, but usually with correct guidelines and spiritual leadership in place, it goes the right way, and that's what we'd like to see. It's exciting to hear some of that. Committee chairman responsibilities. So if you're the chairman of your committee, some things that fall into your lap is communicating with your committee, communicating with your group of churches, just information, you know, delegating responsibilities to make sure that a project happens, or doing it yourself, visiting your projects. You know, you can't do all the work, but groups enjoy when people from their churches come and visit the project, show some interest, and good orientation. Usually there's an orientation for the group either on the first day that they arrive, or some groups do it before they go, just to give the group an expectation of what they're going to experience. You know how young men are, they have some kind of an expectation, and when they get to the place and it's not quite like that, it can mess some people up more than others, but good orientation is the key to a good project. Let's just put it that way.
Is the chairman expected to visit the project, or at least the committee member, or where do you, as CAM? I know the first time we didn't have anybody visit the committee at all. What is your expectation?
You know, that we would expect committee members to visit the project, yes. I don't know that we have a policy on that, but most groups, they do. Either on the first day for orientation, somebody shows up, or somebody goes there to preach for a weekend, or I don't know what they do for church services, but a lot of groups, one of their ministers will show up on a weekend for the service. So yeah, we would highly encourage some committee member to visit the project sometime.
Is there usually a minister on there the whole time?
Not necessarily. I think your house parent or your house parent person would be this, whoever you pick for that is going to be the spiritual leader, whether he's ordained or not. It doesn't matter to us. That'd be up to you. Not necessarily.
For looking for a project with the like the regional group leader being
Yeah, I don't think it's nailed down to one person. If you work together as a team, this is a team effort. If your chairman is the point man, then to go ahead. But if other people have suggestions, and I worked with the chairman out in Colorado to meet with the forestry. He did most of the work, but it doesn't really matter. Somebody has a suggestion or a clue or a lead, work with your team and develop that relationship.
So if I'm understanding right, just trying to get this clear in my head, but the regional groups are responsible to find their own projects, or does CAM help out with some of that, or how does that work?
So what happens every year is I'm looking for projects all the time as well. So this year, I have projects available in Port Arthur, Texas. We have projects available in Gates, Oregon. We have a couple forestry projects available in Tennessee and North Carolina, and rebuilding in Kentucky. So I will put all of that out to the groups, and then first come, first serve. I'll say I have projects available in a forestry project in North Carolina for February and March of next year. And generally, when groups are looking for a project, they'll call me or email me and ask, hey, what's available? And I will give them what I have. But if that doesn't work for you, then you're welcome to look for others on your own. But I usually have a list of a dozen or more per year with our DRS projects before and after. And we also work with Appalachian Service Project, some organizations that do rebuilding. They do the funding, we do the volunteers. So that's what's happening in Kentucky right now. So yeah, if probably your first move would be if you want to contact me and see what's available, and then if none of that works or if I don't have anything available, maybe look for some other projects. And there's no lack of work out there. It's just finding it. And like he said, maybe your first project, get some help from somebody that has done projects, or on a DRS base or a base that's already set up. But we're open to anything. Ideal number of young men per project. It depends a little bit on the size of your base. Your location is one factor. Our base in Monteagle, Tennessee, we go there every year with a group or two. That lodge is a little smaller, so there you probably want a maximum of 8 young men. 6 is ideal. It's with the facility, but then you go to Jenkins, Kentucky, where we're rebuilding. There you could have 12 to 15 probably. Lots of work and we're in a church there. So the facility has a little bit to do with it. But yeah, most groups do 10 to 12. It's just kind of a comfortable number of young men to have together and be able to have meaningful discussions and maybe some one-on-one and...
Bounty Waters, you mentioned backpacking in, I guess. You have a facility you can carry in.
I think the biggest group there they have is six, just because you have to carry everything on your back. Like, there you're backpacking and canoeing through lakes and, yeah. So, who qualifies to go along on a project? So, that will depend on who you allow to go on your project, what your criteria is, but ages 18 to 25, and, you know, ideally, they have this vision. Like somebody said yesterday, it's not an ideal place for a troubled young man. There, it's not a counseling center, but it can be a place to mentor a young man who's struggling. Like, we've heard many testimonies of people who have come there and have gained some kind of victory through some counseling or just talking with other boys. And I don't know, do you have any other ideas on who qualifies to go along?
We have always held, because the U.S. government holds it, if you are not registered for the draft, you are not qualified to be a CO when there is a draft. So you must be registered, and before we take anyone on one of our pilot projects, they have to answer whether they're registered or not. If they're not registered, we give them the information to get them registered. It is actually a big fine if they ever were to enforce it. They're not enforcing it currently, but it is one of those things. The draft can come quickly, and you may not have time to think about it and realize all of a sudden, hey, I wasn't registered, and you have no option of being a conscientious objector.
Is there a limit to how soon after you turn 18 you need to register?
Even if you fail to register and you're 25 years old, you can still do it.
Okay.
So you're not in the draft
you
right now.
You used to be able to get it at the post office.
Yeah, these are at the post office.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple extra if you want to take one with you, but they're at the post office. You can get them.
Am I right that in Ohio,
yeah, I think you automatically are registered.
Yeah,
when
some states is. You need to find out for your own state. Pennsylvania is not.
Good
yeah,
it's good to know that. I didn't realize.
If you're not registered, I think you're not eligible for other government things like Social Security and some of those things.
It's a pretty stiff penalty if you catch it.
Yeah.
Filled out for CAM that gets turned into CAM, an ASW application. On the back side, we have one that we put together for your local congregation, and the ministry of your local congregation to sign off. So unless we have an approval from the local ministry, we won't take it.
Mm.
We need to have it clear from them that they feel comfortable with where you're at and that you're for real. And yeah. So that's another qualification on our group. And of course, then, as was already mentioned, someone who will accept, support, and obey the standards. And we'll get into looking at that probably a little bit later in one of the handbooks.
So yeah, basically, who qualifies? Somebody that will not be a liability, huh? To the reputation, the vision, the whole idea of this service program.
One thing too, we committee or ministry look over the group. If you know your young people, soon know if there's too many questions.
No, if you're a young lady, you do not need to register. That question was kind of up in the air a year or two ago, and that has been laid to rest. Young women will not need to register and will not be drafted in the near future anytime soon, they said, because that's an act of Congress that has to happen, and they have other things to think about, I guess. But it was up for, I don't know if Congress made an actual decision, but the answer we got from Selective Service is that has been laid to rest for the time being, and yeah, we don't have to worry about that. That would have brought a whole different set of dynamics to this program, you know? If you would now have to have facilities for young ladies as well, but it is not the case at this point. All right, maybe the last one, what would it look like if a draft were reinstated? I talked a little bit about that. I told you 190 days if the draft would be reinstated. Is that 190 days would be almost 6 months, huh? Yes. It's a little bit of time for us. I would need to check that number again, but I was thinking it was more like 4 months. But it's 4 to 6 months that we would have to get our ducks in a row. And in that case, CAM would become the qualified employer. Based on a state's regulation, we would have to pay minimum wage to the ASWs, which would probably ask your church to pick up that tab. And that can be done several ways. You know, if you want your young men to serve voluntarily, we would pay them and they could pay it, give it back, or, you know, there's several different ways all of that could work. They would have to serve 2 years, minimum of 2 years somewhere, and that's why I say we've been trying to establish more of a long-term base. You know, our service units like Faith Mission Home and Hillcrest and the old people's homes, those all qualify for these projects, so we could place people there. I think international missions and things like that. So the more places like that your group has, the more you're able to control your environment. Any more questions about that?
What about like these boys' camps? Do they qualify for that or not?
Yeah, we had representatives of several of those and talked to them, and I think all of those would qualify as well. It's kind of a thing where I think Selective Service, CAM as CASP has become the qualified employer, so I think they would trust us to place, you know, these boys wherever we deemed fit. And I think, you know, they would tell us if this is not going to work or, you know, hey. But I think they know us well enough, and that's what the CASP program is doing right now, is building a relationship where of trust. And
you say a larger facility. Are you suggesting there might be a possibility in case of an actual draft to be placed for 100 young men to do something, or what's the thought?
That would be a stretch, 100, but you know, across our churches, we're representing about 4,000 people in the CASP program, 4,000 young men, as it is now. And I don't know exactly what percent of those would be drafted. Like, probably not 100% of them, but if we would have to play, yeah, I don't know how many, but if, yeah, it's a little bit up in the air, you know, what would actually happen if there would be a draft. In my mind, it's, yeah, I think I know how it would be for the most part, but where would everybody go? That would be a thing to decide at that time. But
2 years is a long time.
Yeah, it's not just 4 weeks when the draft. But we did ask them, yeah, last year, what does it look like? Does it look like there's a draft coming? Do you foresee it in the future with all of the wars that are going on and the fighting? And haven't got any drift. Like, it seems like selective service and alternative service is the last thing on people's minds right now. In fact, they only have an acting director of selective service right now. The person we worked with, he went for another job, and so that place is actually, there's only an acting director there. So it doesn't seem like that could or is a possibility, but anything could change, you know? In a minute, you don't know what'll happen in this world, but the powers that be right now, I think they're looking at, you know, the morale of a conscripted army is not going to be the best, looking at Russia's army and some of that. A volunteer army is going to do much better, and so they're upping their recruiting efforts and things like that. So, but doesn't mean we should lay down our guards. Every other year, we like to have a census from all of your groups, see how many young men ASWs are represented, so we ask for a census that would come through.
Alternative service workers.
Yeah, ASWs, sorry. Alternative
I
service
workers. Sure.
Yep. Sorry. Should have explained that. Just to see how many people we're working with. So I don't know if you have any other questions. Yeah. Now there are probably some deferments like marriage and farm responder, but that will be on when a draft actually happens. Every county has a local draft board, and your young men would go before that draft board, and they're the ones who decide whether you are going to be placed as a CO or not. They make that final decision, and so we tell our young men that it is important that your life shows that you are one before you get to this draft board, because they're going to ask questions, they're going to look around to see, you know, they want to know, and not just what you say, but is this actually who you are? So, in short, we want this to be a CASP, to be a tool in the hands of churches to use for teaching, and it's a subject. When have you last heard it preached across your pulpit? Maybe you have currently, but a lot of times I get the answer that, you know, not for a long time.
And
so, but it is an important, because it it's not just about not fighting in war. It's about how you react to the guy that pulls out in front of you. It's how you react to anybody that you need to show love and kindness to. This is everyday life stuff. It's not just about war. Huh? If it comes to that, we know what to do, but this is about teaching a lifestyle. And so this is supposed to be a tool. We don't want CASP to make all the rules. We want it to be your program as well. And so the best way that we can work with you to make it your program, but we can also, we have some resources to make it happen. Best way that we can work together. For the glory of God.
Question, and maybe either of you, Phil, you were making an effort last year when we had government officials there.
Mm-hmm.
Were you going to talk about that at all, Brother Rick or Phil? Anything? My question was, so you, Phil, do you have any comments about that mock draft board and what was said there? A lot of these brothers would not have been there. Either one of you were maybe going to talk about it. Or...
Yeah. So last year, Brother Rick put together a, what did you call it?
Conscientious Objectors Encouragement Day.
Conscientious Objectors Encouragement Day, where we actually had the Pennsylvania State Director, Selective Service Director, and the local draft board there, and did a mock draft with four boys, I think it was, who sat before this board, and the board interrogated them, asked them questions, and it was very interesting because that's the real life scenario, what would happen in the event of a draft. So I'll let Rick say whatever more he wants to say about that, and yeah, thanks for your interest. I mean, yeah, they are all digital.
Are you talking about this one? Are you talking about the other one? The big one. Okay. I didn't know that's
hot. It's not put together in one. Like, all of the policies are on a different, and I could send some of those out, but you can make copies of those as well if you'd like.
Okay.